Welcome to Research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and I want to welcome the callers and chatters to Research at the National Archives and Beyond. This show will provide individuals interested in genealogy an opportunity to listen, learn, and take action. If you have logged in as a guest and wish to participate in the chat, you can sign in through your Facebook account or Blog Talk Radio. I will also open the lines in the second half of the show so that you can ask questions or make a comment. Following the show, you can continue this discussion on the genealogy and history forum of Afrogenius.com and research at the National Archives and Beyond Facebook page. In fact, please like both pages. Well, the topic for tonight's show is the Brewers, a black family searches for its roots. And my guest is Beatrice Nevins. She is an author, family historian, motivational speaker, nationally recognized business career expert, and executive coach. And she will discuss her newest book, Children Go Where I Send You. Cindy, the Brewers Uncover Their Roots. Now, we're going to learn why would whites in a small southern town put a black woman's obituary in the family scrapbook? And why would one of the cousins treasure it so long? Who is Emmeline Watts? And what is the connection with the Watts family? So let me give a warm welcome to Beatrice Nevins to research at the National Archives and Beyond. Beatrice, welcome. Thank you so much
Hi.
For holding in there.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Okay, so why don't we go to that burning question. Why would whites in a small southern town put a black woman's obituary in the family scrapbook?
Well, I tell you, there's a woman by the name of Cynthia Portia. She's the great-great-granddaughter of Thomas H. Watts, who was my great-grandmother, Emmeline Watts Brewer's slave owner. And she went to her aunt's house one day, and she actually was thumbing through her family scrapbook, and she found Emmeline's obituary in there. And she just sort of wondered to herself, what's a former slave's obituary doing in our family scrapbook? And so anyway, many years passed, and then Cynthia actually met Nancy Merriman, a Watts in-law, and she shared that obituary with Nancy. Nancy was doing some Googling regarding her husband, who was a Watts, and she found our family website, and she actually sent me an email, and she said, I have a copy of your great-grandmother's obituary. And I had to kind of stop in my tracks, shake my head. What do you mean? Because we, as a family, the Brewers, we really didn't know too much about Emmeline, really, other than her name. And so when Nancy sent the email, of course, I was very receptive, and we started emailing each other back and forth. Cynthia and another Watts family member came in, and we were just Googling and for information and emailing each other, and we decided to all meet. And so we went down to Pageland, South Carolina, and we met. And coincidentally, it was on the day that Dr. Martin Luther King's memorial in Washington, D.C. was dedicated. Well, we met, and then we went to the Chesterfield Courthouse. We started looking through all of these documents, and we really had to come to the conclusion that Emmeline was really more than a slave to the Watts family, that she was actually related. And we actually started talking to some of the Watts family members after our initial meeting. And the Watts family members all knew that Emmeline was related. It wasn't a secret. And then
well,
as I spoke...
That's quite amazing, though. I mean, if I'm hearing you right, the family mm-hmm. contacted you.
Yes.
You didn't contact them, which is wonderful. I mean, one of the things that I would love to have, and those probably on who are in the chat, would love to have someone contact them with that kind mm-hmm. of information. And so mm-hmm. you now are at the point where you're determining that Emmeline's father was
yes.
the slave owner. Is that what you're
yes.
saying?
Yes. That's right. That's correct. And subsequently, we contacted another Watts family member, and he became very interested in this whole story, and his sister sent him a Watts family scrapbook, another one, and right on the first page was Emmeline's obituary, and it actually said at the bottom, slaves were freed in 1862.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were really surprised that, you know, the Watts family, evidently they knew the relationship and they thought a lot of her. Now, in terms of why did one of the Watts cousins keep Emmeline's obituary really till the day he died, and that's because Emmeline was actually a midwife in the town of Page Lynn, Mount Croghan, South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and she delivered a lot of those babies in that town, and he was one of the babies that she delivered. So he treasured her obituary.
Oh, wow. And would you say that she had a very close relationship to the Watts family?
Yes, she did. And as we subsequently found out, the older Brewer members really knew about that relationship. I'll tell you about a story that one of the older Watts told us, and he's now 92 years old. And he said that he was sitting in the pharmacy in a booth, and his aunt was talking to one of my dad's cousins, and she actually told my dad's cousin, Arthur Brewer, that they were related.
So
I don't think
secret.
That this was a secret
yeah.
between the two families. I guess it was really sort of the younger family members who really didn't know too much about it. But I must say that when I was a teenager, my dad and aunt told me a story about their white relatives visiting their mother, you know, on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I didn't really pursue it. It just went in one ear and out the other.
Yes, yes. But now, what can you, you know, other than knowing that Emmeline Watts was a midwife, what else can you mm-hmm. tell us about Emmeline Watts Brewer? And, you know, when slavery ended, what happened to Emmeline?
Okay, well, this is really the exciting thing about doing your genealogical search. You find out a lot about your family that you probably didn't know. And as I said before, we really didn't know too much about Emmeline nor her husband, Robert. But in terms of doing the research, we found out that both Robert and Emmeline, who were former slaves, really kind of reinvented themselves. And as early as 1871, Robert owned land, and he actually purchased, I believe it was 48.3 acres of land.
Mm-hmm.
And on that land, he actually built a church. And the church is still in existence today. It's called the United Methodist Church. And he did this because the former slaves in that town, when they went to church, they had to sit in the segregated balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't want to do that. So Robert and his brother Will, they actually built a church. And in terms of Emmeline, she also built a church. And she built the Wesley Chapel United Methodist Church, which is not too far from Oro. And she did that because she didn't want the black children in her neighborhood to have to go so far to go to church. And that church, Wesley Chapel, is
yes.
still in existence today. It's over 104 years old. And this is where we met for a memorial service for Robert and Emmeline last year.
Oh, this
and
is
Emmeline's
wonderful.
Also, yeah, and Emmeline's also buried in the cemetery there.
Now, was this your first time visiting the church and the burial site?
Well, no, I had visited the church many, many years ago,
yes.
But of course I really didn't have the understanding of all the history that went behind it. And I do remember going into the cemetery. I remember them saying, oh, yeah, this is Emmeline's grave and blah, blah. But, you know, it really didn't have an impact like it, you know, did this time.
Yeah.
Because I actually realized that, you know, here were two people who were basically in slavery and that they came out and not only did they want to do things for themselves, but they did a lot of things for their community.
Yes, for, it does sound like that.
Especially the African Americans in their community. And I also found out that... well, let me tell you this story. People in our family said that Robert was a member of the South Carolina legislature. And you used to hear some of the older members saying, yes, he got in his buggy and he drove 80 miles down to Columbia, whatever. But by me being a researcher, I wanted to track that down and make sure that that was actually correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did contact... the South Carolina legislature, and they said, no, they didn't have a Robert Brewer, blah, 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 blah. But I did find out subsequently that Robert Brewer was a member of the, I think it was the famous 1869 militia.
And so
and
what
I'm not
was
sure
the significance of being in the militia?
Okay, I don't think a lot of people know this, but... after Abraham Lincoln died, Andrew Johnson became president. And unlike Lincoln, who really wanted a very progressive Reconstruction plan, Andrew Johnson really didn't want it. So at the time, the radical Republicans took over Congress, and they decided to actually divide the South into five military districts. And the districts could be run according to the population. So in South Carolina, blacks were in the majority. And so blacks actually were in the majority in the state legislature. And so, of course, this caused problems. You might say African Americans were ruling South Carolina at that particular time. So this caused a lot of difficulties, particularly among the whites. And so the governor of South Carolina actually formed this militia. He called all men, I forgot what age group, into service. And so this militia actually acted like you would say today a National Guard,
mm-hmm.
to keep order.
And so you found Robert and the 1869 Chesterfield County Militia.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So we were very, very proud of the fact that he was, because the militia is actually, in terms of the Klan activity, they were actually arresting Klan members and taking them down to Columbia for their trial. So we don't know if that's why Robert was going to Columbia or not.
Yes. Well, it looks like mm-hmm. I have a question coming in, and I'm going to answer the question. When I click you on, it's area code 414. Do you have a question?
Well, I don't have a question. I actually have a comment.
Okay.
This is Kathy Merriman from Wisconsin, and I am Beatrice's cousin.
Oh.
She's the one that found the obituary and sent it. I mean, she didn't find it, but she sent it to me.
Right. I'm the one that...
Hi, Nancy.
Together. Hello, Bea. How are you?
Okay. How you doing?
I'm fine. I'm delighted mm-hmm. that the story is being told more and more.
Yes.
It's such a wonderful story, and it has enriched my life so much, and I know that if others were to search they would find connections that were surprising as well. You know, the we're all connected, and if we look hard enough, we can find our commonalities. So I'm a German and Norwegian, or the granddaughter of Germans and Norwegians, and I never in my life have thought that I would have any connection to slavery or to the Civil War or the Revolutionary War. And here now I'm linked to all of those things, and I'm an only child, and suddenly I have this amazing family that I'm a part of, thanks to B. That's wonderful. So I just wanted to give a little shout-out and encouragement to anyone else who's searching that if you look in enough places and are lucky enough, you'd be surprised at what you could find.
And Nancy, it's wonderful that you decided to go on that search and to find Bea and her family. And so many people are hoping that their relatives will do the same thing.
Of course.
So hats off to you.
Yes, hats off to you, Nancy.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you again. Love you, my dear.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that the Brewers, and we've talked about that, they stress education a lot. So why don't you tell us about what they did as far as stressing education in the family? And tell us about their children and their grandchildren.
Okay. Well, first of all, Robert and Emmeline, as slaves, of course, were denied education. And Emmeline and Robert couldn't read or write. We have found a document with Emmeline's mark on it where she was selling some land. And so she actually, you know, couldn't read or write. But they did stress education. And I can tell you that their first daughter, Lavinia, had 8 children. And of those 8 children, 4 of them became health professionals. 2 became physicians. Now, this is one generation out of slavery. 2 became physicians. 1 became a dentist, Dr. Spofford Gathens. And Dr. Gathens actually went to Northwestern School of Dentistry, which I kind of find amazing back in the, you know, 1800s. He graduated from that school. And also there was John Gathens, who was a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the Brewers actually became teachers. And I'll talk about the Rosenwald schools for people that don't know about the Rosenwald schools. The Brewer family actually either owned, taught at, or oversaw 2 of the Rosenwald schools. At the request of Booker T. Washington, Julius Rosenwald, who was the former president of Sears and Roebuck, funded more than 5,300 schools in the rural South for black children. And these schools now are very famous. They are national historic sites. And a lot of the schools have disappeared. In terms of our family, we had the 2 schools. One was actually torn down, and my cousin Arthur actually built his house on the foundation of the school. But 2/3, I believe, of all of the children in the South, the black children, were educated at these Rosenwald schools. So I would encourage anybody out there who's listening to actually do some research on those schools, because they were really very, very successful.
Right, and I'd like to just reference back to 2 shows I had on the Jeans Teachers where the Rosenwald schools were actually discussed. So those are 2 other Blog Talk Radio shows that I had back in March. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and continue this discussion. at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Bernice Alexander Bennett, and you can join me every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, where I will have an expert to share resources, stories, and answer your burning genealogy questions. Remember, all of my guests share a deep passion and knowledge of genealogy and history. Well, you have been listening to Beatrice Nevins, and she has shared with us and answered the question, why would a white Southern community have an obituary of a black woman in the family's scrapbook? She also had a caller, and her caller was Nancy Merriman. And Nancy is the person who connected with Beatrice. And so this has been just one of those stories that keeps giving, and we're going to continue to hear about the Watts family and also about the Brewer family. Now, we've heard about some of the accomplishments of the family, and we will hear more. So, Beatrice, what are some of the other Brewer accomplishments?
Okay, again, Robert and Emmeline didn't have education, but instilled the value of it into future generations. I know for me and probably most of my cousins, it was not really a choice of whether you were going to college. You were going to college. And it wasn't a choice of whether you were going to do well in your profession. You were going to be, you were going to excel in your profession. And so we have a lot of people in our family. First, I like to say we have a Tuskegee Airman in our family. Second Lieutenant Robert Clifford Robinson, who unfortunately was killed in action, in during the war, but he received a Purple Heart, and he's buried at Arlington. We also have my uncle Walter Nevins, attorney Walter Nevins, who's now deceased, but he actually was responsible for a case. It was called the Elmer Davis case, and this was really in the pre-Miranda days when people were just picked up and they weren't read their rights. And so Elmer Davis was actually an uneducated black man, poor, who was picked up by the police and held for 4 days, and my uncle actually was his attorney, and they lost the case in the lower courts, and this case was actually heard by the U.S. Supreme Court, and at the time, Chief Justice Earl Warren actually, gave the opinion. And so we're very, very proud of that. We also have Reverend Thomas Huntley, who was the minister who led the first, it was called at the time, the Negro Minister's Prayer March on Washington. And he was a close associate of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. There's so many people in my family who have just accomplished so much. We have Dr. Cornis Enix, who's a nationally renowned thoracic surgeon, James and William Whitley, who are well-known in the architecture field. We have Kim Whitley. That's my cousin. She's on OWN in her show, Raising Whitley. The list just goes on and on and on.
Right, and you have two comments coming out of the chat. One of them, it just says, that's beautiful that failure was not an option in your family.
Yeah.
And that they were going to excel, and that was it. And then there's another question. Have you found any records that Emmeline received any assistance from her slaveholder father?
Okay, yes, that's a very, very good question. Actually, Cynthia, Nancy, my cousin Kelly, and I, when we went to the Chesterfield Courthouse, we actually found a land deed where Thomas H. Watts, Emmeline's slave owner actually had given 50 acres of land to a woman named Arcilla Watts, and we believe that that was Emmeline's mother.
Oh, okay. Now, we have a question coming out. There's a question on the line, area code 443. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hello, Bernice.
Hello.
And good evening to your guest, Beatrice, enjoying the show.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question about Emmeline herself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess one of the questions, first of all, first question, there's this obituary. When did she die?
Yes.
When did she die?
She died in 1925. This obituary was actually put in the Pageland Journal, which was a white newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell you at the time that was the Jim Crow South. So
sure,
even for a black, for a black woman's obituary to be in that newspaper was unusual. And then it was quite large. Which is something that, yes, it was quite large. It wasn't like a little, you know, entry. It was quite large. So,
I'm sorry. Following up on that question, okay, she died in 1925 because I was trying to get a time frame in terms of, so we're in now the heart of Jim Crowism. She dies in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that happened? First of all, there's sort of two parts. What happened continually that she was endeared by the white family, the white cousins, the folks who knew her, and how did it happen that the next generation of the African-American side didn't know a lot about her and her memory was not continual? I'm just curious about that.
That's a very, you know, that's an excellent question. I think what happened with Emmeline and the Watts, because you have to remember where they lived in Mount Croghan, Pageland. Even today, I think Mount Croghan only has 125 people. So this was a very small town. And just from family lore, I understand that the Watts family came to visit Emmeline quite a lot, and she went to visit them. We have found documents where the Watts family members have actually, they were her witnesses, like on land documents, land deeds. So evidently, they just kept a very close relationship. We know that Townley Blair Watts, who was Thomas H. Watts's son and Emmeline's half-brother, when Emmeline was actually on her deathbed, he came and he sat at the bed with her until she took her last breath, you know, and was quite upset when she died. So she was able to maintain that relationship.
I guess
now, why didn't we know?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I think, let me put it to you this way. I think there's probably not a Brewer child who doesn't or hasn't heard of the Watts family.
Uh-huh.
But we just didn't know about it in any kind of detail. Because
guess,
a lot of the Brewer children used to go down south to South Carolina, you know, during the summer. And there was always a discussion about the Watts family, and some of the Watts used to come over and visit and vice versa and that kind of thing. So I think that people knew it, but I would say I'm a baby boomer. I would say beyond my generation, I'm not sure that people in my family knew about that.
Right.
And
well,
I only really knew about
it. It wasn't a whisper, though. I mean, they talked about it. Mm-hmm.
Yes, they did talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So,
and I have a cousin. I don't know if she's on the line or not. She's supposed to be. But she told me that when she was a child, when she and her brother would go into the pharmacy where one of the Watts women worked, that the woman would openly acknowledge that they were her cousins.
I guess it sounds as if maybe the subsequent generations went forth and they went out of that immediate area, so contact was lost over time. Would that be accurate to say?
Yes,
so,
I think that would be accurate because I have cousins in California their mother moved away and went to Tennessee, and evidently she never discussed this whole thing with them, and so they didn't know anything about it.
In a way, they kind of lost the story then.
They lost the story, right. Mm-hmm. But enough of the Brewer children, I think, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, know about it. I mean, in terms of my talks and calling people, most people would go, oh, yeah, the Watts, yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
But it was just that what I'm talking about would be the younger generation. The people who were in their 20s or 30s, I don't think they knew about it.
Mm-hmm. And a final question, I'll let you go back because I'm sure others have questions. Have you put that obituary, the one that was in the other family's scrapbook, is that obituary online on your website? Because it sounds like it would be interesting to read. She sounded like a remarkable woman.
Oh, okay. Actually, thanks. I think she was a remarkable woman because she had a profession where most women really didn't work. They stayed in the home, and she was a midwife. The obituary actually is in my book. I put it in the book, Children Go Where I Send Thee. And, that's pretty much where. But I will definitely consider putting it online.
Right. Thank you so much. Great show.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit more about Thomas Watts. Interesting story also.
He was an interesting character. Okay, Thomas H. Watts actually was a bachelor. He was a bachelor until he was, I think, 54 years old. So he actually had a farm. He had all females on his farm, three adult black women. Two were age 25. One was actually, I think she was in her 60s. And then all these little black female children on the farm. And by the 1860s, and I'm going to talk about the slave schedules in case people don't know about them, but it wasn't really until 1850 that they started taking information in terms of putting it into the slave schedules. And so if you look at the slave schedules of Thomas H. Watts, 1850 and 1860, and of course by 1870, the slaves were freed, so there was no need for that. But the slaves were actually classified by numbers. All right, no names. So you would look at Thomas H. Watts, and you would see Thomas H. Watts, you know, he was the slave owner, and then you would see slave number one, black female, age 60, slave number two, black female, age 25, and then there was Emmeline, slave number nine, and the reason that we knew that was because Emmeline was born in 1842. And this, she was 8 years old in 1850. Now, this is where the difficulty comes with a lot of black people trying to go back in terms of doing this genealogical research, because the slaves didn't put their names down. And unless you can find some documents, which you probably can, by maybe looking in the archives in your particular state, looking at the estate papers of the slave owner, and hopefully you have the slave owner's name, and try to do your research that way.
Okay, but did you find Emmeline in any of his documents, wills or
we went to
Southern Claims Commission looking for documentation.
Yes, we did. Nancy actually found this because we're always constantly searching for things, and I do have to say Nancy is very proficient at it, and so is Cynthia. And Nancy went to fold3.com, and she looked under the military records, which to me, I would have never thought to do that. But she looked under the military records, and lo and behold, she found Thomas H. Watts had actually applied for reimbursement after the Civil War. And in order to get this reimbursement, you had to prove that you were a Union man. And the government actually sent out, I guess, these commissioners to take these testimonies from people. And so Thomas H. Watts actually had several people testify on his behalf that he was a Union man. And several of his former slaves actually testified for him. And it was just so wonderful to just, I mean, hear their words through the writing of the testimonies of how their lives were. For example, we found out that one of the slaves had been purchased by Thomas H. Watts when he was 8 years old, and another one had been purchased by him when he was also a child. And they, in these testimonies, they spoke about how the Union soldiers came and they took the horses and they took the different thing, bacon, different things. And anyway, Thomas H. Watts was actually very successful in getting his claim honored. But just to read the testimony, the whole thing is 47 pages. And just to read it, it's astonishing. It just takes you completely back in time. And I did want to share a story that I read in there. One of the slaves who testified on Thomas H. Watts's behalf. Now, remember, during that time, you could not be reimbursed unless you proved that you didn't have any allegiance to the Confederacy.
Right.
And so one of these slaves actually testified that, you know, one day Thomas H. Watts came up to him and said, you know, do you feel that the black people have souls like white people? And the slave said, oh, I wasn't going to answer him because I thought he was trying to set me up, and, you know, later he was going to tell other white people and I'd get in trouble. And he said that Thomas H. Watts kept coming to him and asking him that question. And finally, the slave said, yes, black people have, you know, the slaves or black people have souls. And Thomas H. Watts said, of course they do. And then it seems like Thomas H. Watts was actually in some danger for his views. He didn't believe in the Confederacy. He believed that South Carolina, as you know, was the first state to secede from the Union. And he believed that that was wrong, that South Carolina and the South should have been with the Union. And so he was actually in a bit of danger for his views.
Yes, but it sounds like, I mean, I have read Southern Claims Commission records, and you're right. I mean, you can gain a lot about the character of
mm-hmm.
the person who submitted the claim, and it sounds like you did pick up
mm-hmm.
information about the character of Thomas Watts.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And it really it showed us really, it gave us a glimpse into that life in slavery. That was really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have another question coming out of the chat, and you may have covered this, but I'll just ask you again. What was the relationship over the years of the White Watts family to others from the black community?
Okay, that's a different question. In other words, what was their relationship to other people in the other black people in Pageland? I would have to say I really don't know because I'm not from Pageland.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really answer that question. I don't really know. But I do know that they had a warm relationship with the Brewer family, particularly in the late 1800s, the early 1900s, and even up until the 1950s. And I can also give you a little story. as we were doing this genealogical research, I called one of the Watts down in South Carolina, and she doesn't live in Pageland, but she lives about 3 hours away. And I called her, and I said, hello, my name is Beatrice Nevins, and I'm great-granddaughter Emmeline Watts Brewer, and I wanted to talk to you. And she said, oh, yeah, you're related to us, just like that.
Just like that, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, which is
and
great.
And then when her grandson came, she acknowledged it. And when her grandson came to tell her that someone was on their second phone or whatever, she said, oh, would you just tell them I'll call them back because I'm talking to a relative.
Oh, okay. Now, mm-hmm. which is a good feeling for you. Well, but now how many slaves did he own?
Well, in 1850, he owned 11 slaves. And then it seems like he owned more in 1860. I'm not really sure the count, but it was somewhere like 16 or 17.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really looking at the slave schedule at this point, yeah.
Right. And do mm-hmm. you have any photos of Emmeline?
Yes, I do.
Was that a photo of her that was posted on Facebook?
Yes, it is. Yes, right.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
That was Emmeline, yes. And there's also a photo of her on our family website. And there's a photo of her, of course, that hangs in the Wesley Chapel United Methodist Church because she was the mother and founder of that church.
Church. Oh,
mm-hmm.
that's
and she actually had her son Isaiah sort of portion off some of that Brewer land and build that church there. And I have to say to you that the Brewer family, they're really into, I would call it almost social justice or helping others in the community. And even today, you know, people are buried at the Wesley Chapel Church's cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be a Brewer to be in there, and if you can't afford it, you know, they bury you there anyway. So I think this is one of the things I've found out about Robert and Emmeline. They really cared for their community. They
yes.
cared for the African Americans, and I think that goes down through the generations. You know, I know my dad was like that. His brother was like that. His aunt, his mother was like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, I'll tell you another thing. This is a great story, too. I knew my grandmother's name was Effie T. Nevins, and my middle name is Thomasina. So everybody kept saying, well, she must have been Effie Thomasina Nevins. And then lo and behold, because of all of this genealogical research, I looked in my dad's papers, and I actually saw that he was applying for a copy of his birth certificate, and it asked for his mother's name, and her middle name was Tella Farrow, which was Booker T. Washington's middle name.
Oh, okay. Well, now we have a request for your family website URL.
Yes, it's http://Robert Robert, and spelled out A-N-D, Emmeline, and that's E-M-I-L-I-N-E, Brewer, BREWER.net. Or you could just do, I think you can get it by doing www.robertandemmelinebrewer.net.
Okay, well, we're going to have a lot of people going to your website.
Now, oh, that's great.
Have you encountered any surprises?
Yes, we actually just found out that the Brewer family and the Watts family actually go back to the American Revolution. And I'll tell you how that is. That goes through Thomas Huntley, who was a patriot in the American Revolutionary War. And I'll kind of go into how we're related to Thomas Huntley. Thomas H. Watts' mother was named Lavinia Huntley Watts, and her parents were Thomas and Zephrenia, I think that was the way you pronounce it, Huntley. And it seems that Thomas Huntley Sr. was considered a patriot of the American Revolutionary War, that he contributed a lot of money to the war effort, and two of his sons actually were soldiers. At least we know one son was a soldier, and those two men were Thomas H. Watts's uncles.
Well, we
so that was a very interesting
find. You just discovered this, right?
Yes, we just literally, I think it was like yesterday or the day before.
Wow. We have a comment coming out of the chat. What? Your family is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We just found out how amazing we are, really. It's really been a wonderful journey to find out all of these wonderful things about people that we really wouldn't have known about right in our own family. That information would have been totally hidden. Reverend Huntley, for example, the one that led the Negro Ministers Prayer March, he married my parents. And I used to hear my dad always saying, oh, Reverend Huntley, Reverend Huntley, Reverend Huntley. But I never knew what the excitement was about Reverend Huntley. I thought it was because he had married them. But now I see, no, he really contributed a lot.
Well, now, there's another question coming out of the chat. Once again, what's the name of the town that Emmeline lived and died in?
Okay, let me explain that, too. It was in Chesterfield County, South Carolina. Now, we believe that Emmeline and Robert actually lived in Mount Croghan, South Carolina. And that's
okay.
A very small town. But then the Brewer family actually lived in Pageland, which is right next door to Mount Croghan. But when we looked at the testimonies, we saw that it said that Thomas H. Watts considered himself a resident of Oro, South Carolina. So we're going to assume, because there's the Oro United Methodist Church,
yes,
that Oro probably back in the day was in that area.
Uh-huh.
And that area now is considered Pageland.
Okay. Well,
and I also want to tell people that in Pageland, come to Pageland, because there's a Brewer Road and there's also a Watts Road.
Okay. Now, what recommendations would you offer to whites who have information about black family members and black
okay.
family members who are searching for information?
All right. In terms of whites who are searching, I would tell them to go to, there's a Facebook page called Coming to the Table, and that I believe is specifically designed for people who are looking for their linked descendants. And when they say linked, in other words, you know, the white families who might have been had ancestors who were slaveholders and trying to find those slaves. I know I was contacted by a lot of people, a lot of whites who actually wanted to find out information about how they could link in to the slaves that their ancestors had. Now, in terms of blacks, I would say, go to FamilySearch.org or Ancestry.com. You don't have to pay for FamilySearch.org. You do have to pay for Ancestry, although they'll give you a free trial period. But actually, you can go probably to your public library. I know here in New York, for example, I went to the Family Search Center over at the Mormon Church right here on 66th Street in Columbus. And I also went to the New York City National Archives. And all of that, they let you go in there. You can use Family Search, Ancestry, Fold3.com, which also you have to it's a 7-day trial period. So you can use all of these facilities and actually you can do this for free. And I know particularly at the Family Search Center, they let you print out as much information as you want. And also at the National Archives in New York, I went there and I was like, I need to print this out. It's,
right.
You know,
and
from
also,
the Southern.
Also, individuals should, I mean, there is Afrogenius.com for those
yes.
who want to even begin to work on their genealogy. Please remember Afrogenius.com is a resource for everyone to check into. Well,
yeah.
Do you have any parting words? Well, before we go to parting words, we do have two questions coming out of the chat. First of all, is there an old family homestead of the Brewers and the Watts?
Okay, yes. There is an old family homestead of the Watts, and I actually have that in the book, a picture of that, in Children Go Where I Send Thee. And also, we have a picture of a house. I'm not sure that Emmeline lived there, but I know it's on the property that she owned. And Robert had actually built her a log cabin, but it burned down. And there's a house on that particular land. And, of course, there's a lot of Brewer land down in Pageland. So a lot of my family members have homes down there.
Okay. And any parting words before we sign off?
Yes, I would really like to encourage everyone to do their genealogical research. A lot of people say to me, oh, my God, you're so, you know, obsessed with this and everything. And it is. It's very addicting because one thing just leads to another. And then, of course, you're going to hit that genealogical brick wall, and that's going to make you just keep searching more and more, and you'll find out a lot of information. I can tell you that just 2 years ago, in 2011, before Nancy contacted me, I had no idea about all the information that was out there about my family. And so I think you can do it in a very short period of time. I've met people that, oh my goodness, black people who have been doing their genealogical research since 1975. You know, so it just depends on how deep you want to get into it and how much time you actually have. A lot of people think it takes a lot of time, but, you know, you go up on Facebook, you go or read your emails or whatever. You can also just try to spend a little time each day just doing your genealogical research.
Yes.
And I think if you
would
try.
Do it for 24 hours if they could. We do have a
question. Oh, yeah, I'm one of those people. If I could do it 24 hours, I would definitely do it.
Right. We have a question coming in from area code 954. You have a question? Or a comment?
Yes, ma'am. I would like to know the longest, the oldest living member of her family now that she knows of.
On which side? The Watts side or the Brewer side?
Excuse me?
Or both. All right, I'll just tell you both. On the Brewer side, we had the oldest living member is Dr. Henry McBride. He's a retired, I don't know if he's retired, but he's a podiatrist in Ohio. And then on the Watts side, we have Mr. Elton James Pigg. He's in a retirement home. And we also have, he's 92, yeah. And we have Mildred Watts Graves. She's 92. And I've been in touch with all of these people on both sides of the family.
Please call in. I want to hear your voice.
Okay, well, thank you. This was a great story. Well, please tell us how we can find your book.
Okay, the book is on the website. Again, you can go to HTTP, is it? Or,
yes.
/ RobertAndEmmeline.net.
Okay, and then they can get the book that way.
And they can get the book that way, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for dealing with the little technical problems we had, but we did manage to get through with this story.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes, we did. And thank you so much, Bernice. I really appreciate it.
Okay,
and thanks
to
your callers. And remember, do your genealogical research.
Absolutely. Well, I want everyone to join me next week because I will have another author. Teresa A. Fuller is the author of Freedom, the Unforeseen Providence, and she will share her research to uncover the truth and journey of her great-grandfather, Jackson J. Fuller, from slavery in South Carolina to freedom in DeSoto, Louisiana. And I'm telling you, that's one amazing story. So good night, everyone, and remember, your ancestors left footprints. Therefore, you should follow the clues that are presented to you through oral history, family records, research at the National Archives and beyond. Now, you can continue this discussion on the Genealogy and History Forum of Afrogenius.com and research at the National Archives and Beyond Facebook page. Also, remember to listen to the African Roots podcast with Angela Walton-Lodgy on Friday morning and Nurturing Our Roots with Antoinette Harrell on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Thank you for joining research at the National Archives and Beyond Blog Talk Radio. Remember, all of my shows are available as a podcast immediately after the broadcast. So have a wonderful evening, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in and hanging in there to wait for our guests to come on. Thank you so much. Good night. Good night.